Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a quote. Few towns in the United States are so pleasantly situated for a delightful rural prospect for fertile neighborhood or health. And during the whole time of the settlement of this town, the health of the citizens has been almost unparalleled. That's from a Columbus Almanac of 1818, written by William Lusk. But in the city's latest almanac, when Lusk's glowing assessment of the city's health is followed by a parenthetical, yeah, except for that pesky miasma and cholera epidemics, you get the feeling that you're in for something perhaps a bit less pretentious. Joining us now to talk about the project of producing a daily almanac for the city of Columbus are its two authors, Tom Betty. He's chair of the Education Committee for the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
And also with us, Doreen Juha-Sauer. She's past president of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. And welcome back to you as well, Doreen.
Thank you.
The title of the book is On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. And I was wondering how you conceived the role of an almanac like this.
Well, I think for us, because we're at Columbus Landmarks Foundation, we were always kiddingly in the office calling it On This Day, On This Spot. And so it was really an attempt to tie sort of the physical presence of the city, some of which is no longer there and some of which is, to stories about people and events and the passers-by of Columbus.
If you have a question or comment for my guests from the Columbus Landmarks Foundation, past president Doreen Juha-Sauer and Tom Betty, chair of the Education Committee there, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. How did you decide what made the cut? And, I mean, were there lots of arguments?
Well,
were there fist fights?
That's very interesting because— initially, this book was two times the size.
Right.
And, you know, when the publisher asked us to do this, we thought, oh, yeah, that would be fine. You know, we can find one or two, three, four stories a day for 200 years. And there are some days where in history where there's a lot of stuff that happened over the last 200 years. And then there are other days where not that much happened. But in the end, we turned in this huge manuscript. It was like 400 pages. And the publisher just freaked and said, no, you need to have one event for one day. So we kind of cheated a little bit. So in some articles, we have the an entry, but then we have a picture that's not related with a caption. So we kind of, you know, compromised with that. So we can have a little bit more on each day than some others.
And Doreen, how did you narrow it down?
Well, what's interesting about that is, and Tom's already alluded to this, is that the last thing we wanted was sort of, you know, May 3rd, 1909, someone yawned. And we were looking for stories. So suddenly you're in the middle of stories. And you have to limit it. So, for instance, and we have an index of sort in the back about James's and people named James and other things. We wound up with a Dr. Snook story in three different locations trying to have that unfold. And that is the famous murder of the veterinarian professor at Ohio State who killed his graduate student.
Right.
And and what was really more interesting was not so much the murder, but the what happened afterward. And so we dragged that through three entries, and then we're cross-referencing. And then you get stories of Thurber. And that the other challenge is, you know a story, and now you're trying to link it to a place, and worse yet, you're trying to find a date that works for it.
And you can't be writing a whole book about just that.
Right.
So we wanted to make it so that, you know, if you look up one date, then, you know, it makes sense. Or if you sit down and wanted to read it all the way through, there would be stories that would link each other to other stories and also to different places.
Now, I imagine this is a thing people gather around the fireplace at night each night and read out loud to the whole family.
You know, like the poems of Longfellow.
Exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. And once again, if you have a question or comment about Columbus history, now is your chance. It doesn't matter what it's about because my guests, Doreen Juha-Sauer and Tom Betty, have written about just about everything from pubs and taverns to, I mean, you know, it's the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. They cover all the bases, past, present, and possibly future.
Which I have to say, Rob talked about May 6th, 1831, when Columbus first formed a government and had elections. Those elections were held in a tavern.
Okay, not a pub, or did he say something?
No, he didn't say any of that.
Oh. He just left that out.
So, you know, taverns in Columbus, you know, we go together.
That's a really big deal. Are you still doing your tavern tours?
Oh, yes, we are. We are now into haunted tavern tours. And then
is it book solid?
I'm not sure, because we really can't keep up with it. You know, the office does. But then in November, we're in Franklinton. This is another sort of merging out, you know, into neighborhoods, which has been very good. And after a while, when you're writing these things, you can't remember if you wrote it here, you put it on a tavern tour, if it's in here, whatnot. And it was like one of my favorite things, and is about the Blue Danube, you know, which is such an icon.
The Blue Dube.
And when somebody said to me, you know, it was almost always owned by a man named George, the daytime George, the nighttime George, and the sometimes George, you better believe that found its way into writing, because it was just too good.
I would imagine after a while you don't remember where you've put tidbits.
That's really true. And I think what we wanted to do, at least in my mind, and Tom is really the political guru, so he was out there searching for wonderful tidbits about politics in Columbus and people who've passed through. And I was sort of fixated with trying to talk about why the city in some places looks the way it does. And so, for instance, we found a story that had been out there for some time, and it actually lasted well into the 40s, about a temple of goodwill that was going to be built downtown that was a consortium of Protestant churches at the end of World War II. And this thing was so big, and they were massing blocks and blocks of downtown around Long Street and Spring Street, that it was to be taller than the Levesque Tower to have a 5,000-seat hotel. And all of this was coming together under a Dr. Charles Lamb. And then suddenly it was like, the deal fell apart. We actually were able to find a picture and get it in of what it was supposed to look like. And because it took up so many large blocks when the deal fell apart, it explains why between Long and Spring and around Front Street, the area looks different. It's parking lots and it's other things. And that was the entry. There's a picture of it on page 300, but that was the entry for October 4th, this Temple of Goodwill. And people don't necessarily remember it, but Mayor Sensenbrenner got himself into a little hot water.
I have wondered about why it's so...
It's different.
It is different.
And it wound up actually also with the Chittenden Hotel being part of the auction block. But much of this, they were offered money. Ohio Historical Society was going to build their new museum, which of course is now on by the freeway at 17th. And they backed out of the deal because they didn't want to sell for the paltry sum of $1.7 million. And less than 3 weeks later, of course, Ohio Historical Society walks to a different site and Nationwide acquires a lot of land. But at that point, it was for back debts. And Sensenbrenner had given away all of Marconi Boulevard to this Protestant organization. He, of course, was a minister. And
he could just give away land, huh?
And he was just giving away. And then there's a backstory we don't even put in about how the city had to reacquire Marconi. But it is interesting to think about what are the last mansions on Broad Street and why is this here and what's there. And
It took us forever to find this picture, too.
Oh, it's a great...
It's
not something you conceived. It's something that was actually in the plans, the original plans. It's sort of like a overlay.
I thought Doreen was crazy when she was telling me this story. And I'm like, pictures that, you know, no sketches or anything that exist. And finally we found it and... You know, I bought her dinner and said, okay, you know.
I don't remember that part, but he did concede.
Now, did you guys just, I know you have some people who helped you with the book.
Many people.
Yes.
The education committee, and we put them all in the front and thanked them because they were wonderful. But there is a funny thing with that, too. Suddenly there would be a part of a story that come to us, like about a murder in the Deschler Hotel, and then we're trying to figure out all the rest of it, because you just don't want to say, on this day, somebody gone and somebody was murdered.
Yeah, right. So they would, you would like, they would help you fill in those blanks.
They were wonderful. I know that, for instance, in December, you know, one of our people, Ann Saren, was really dogged about giving through the whole story about the Bierbauer Bakery, which is a Bierberg, I'm sorry, which has been making Christmas cookies, in fact, for over 100 years. In fact, they won't be this year.
We've talked about that before, and they're not this year.
They're not. You know, they just couldn't, and this would have been their 100th anniversary. So I'm so glad we got the story in. But, you know, then there were just things that we knew from other places, like there, you know, and we don't want to read from the book,
sure,
but rather
right.
talk about it. But this is one, if you don't mind, I will read.
Sure.
That there is a tombstone in Greenlawn Cemetery that is very hard to find sometimes. It's flat in the back. And when we found it, the entire story of this man is on it. And he died on December 24th, 1904. And it says, not for all of the debasing influences of his early life, as a furnace man, a field hand, a deck hand, a jockey, a fighter, and a slave, could undermine those of honesty, courtesy, faithfulness, and dignity and the sweetness of disposition. He was an inspiration to his race and a rebuke to those whose fortunes were greater and achievements less. It was, it's the grave of Washington Townsend. He was actually a slave on Andrew Johnson's plantation and came to Columbus from the Underground Railroad, wound up being a janitor at Ohio State in the only building, University Hall, and a farmer in the North Columbus area. And it's just
That's amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that is wonderful. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. More of this conversation about Columbus history with authors Tom Betty and Doreen Neuhaus-Sauer still to come. But first, Rob Walker and Steve Brown are here to tell you why you should support 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you very much, Ann. You should support 89.7 NPR News because we rely on listener contributions for the biggest source of our income here. Please make the call 1-866-897-9678 or give at WOSU.org. And we want to help you become a member of 89.7 NPR News because of all the people who value public radio, take care of public radio. The programs you enjoy, like All Sides with Ann Fisher, will always be here. You can do your part by going to WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678.
And for this hour only, Steve, if we get your contribution of $10 a month as a sustainer or an annual gift of $120, we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thank you, the book that we're talking about this hour, On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. That's your gift for a $10 a month sustaining gift or a $120 annual gift. This is the book Ann's talking about right now on All Sides. The book has 365 fascinating vignettes about Columbus. You can read the book page by page, or you can flip to any day of the year and learn something interesting about Columbus. This book, On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History, is our gift to you for a sustaining membership of $10 a month, an annual gift of $120, by going to our website at WOSU.org or calling 1-866-897-9678.
Please make that gift. $10 a month gets you the This Day in Columbus, Ohio History book. For $7 a month, the $85 level, you'd qualify for the WOSU member card. That's good for discounts at more than 200 local restaurants and attractions. For just the $5 a month amount, the basic membership, that gets you our airfare program, guys, as well as a WOSU FYIE newsletter and a WOSU grocery tote. So please, whatever fits into your budget, make the call. Support 89.7 NPR News, 1-866-897-9678 or a WOSU.org.
This is an absolutely fascinating book, Steve. I just flipped to my birthday, which is April 2nd, and reading a little bit about Patrick Egan as he came back with fabled stories of the riches of the California Gold Rush and how a crowd of men gathered at Broad and High as they were preparing to go to California for that. I do like here at the end, Egan was part of the funeral business. It says, funerals on short notice, terms cash. I like that. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History, that's our gift to you for a $10 a month sustaining membership, $120 annually at 1-866-897-9678 or visit us at WOSU.org.
And that's just one page in that book, obviously 364 other days. Make the pledge, pick up the Columbus, Ohio History book, 1-866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. excuse me. And this is a membership drive, so think of it as an opportunity. You have a chance to be a leader. Today is the moment to let the leader in you shine. You're a public radio listener, so please lead by example. Become a public radio contributor right now. Call 1-866-897-9678 or log on to WOSU.org.
Make that call of support right now. You can visit us at WOSU.org. If you have the WOSU mobile app, just press donate now. That will take you to our page where you can make a donation to 89.7 NPR News. And you could also give us a call. Talk to our volunteers at 1-866-897-9678. And don't forget that when you contribute at $10 a month as a sustaining member, the book that we're talking about right now on All Sides with Ann Fisher on this day in Columbus, Ohio history is our gift to you for supporting 89.7 NPR News at a $10 a month sustaining level or a $120 annual gift. 1-866-897-9678, WOSU.org. And if you have the mobile app, click donate now.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, you hear from new authors and historians, as well as the latest news stories, and also talks about local food and local arts. Every Tuesday, you hear Tech Tuesday. Every Wednesday, it's Wellness Wednesday, discussions on the latest in medicine and tips on diet and exercise. If these types of discussions are important to you, now's the time to make that pledge of support. Call right now. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go to WOSU.org.
And we thank you very much for your investment in 89.7 NPR News. It's a very simple and easy phone call to make. We've got great phone volunteers out there to take your call. You can visit us online. You can give directly from our mobile app. It's simple and easy. And don't forget, at your gift of $10 a month as a sustaining member, a $120 annual gift, we'll be happy to offer you on this day in Columbus, Ohio history as our way of saying thank you for your investment in 89.7 NPR News. WOSU.org is the website or call us at 1-866-897-9678.
Support comes from Thurber House, presenting best-selling author Laurie R. King, reading from her latest novel of suspense, The Bones of Paris, which delves into the vibrant and sensual world of Paris during the Jazz Age. Monday evening, October 14th at the Columbus Museum of Art. Tickets and more at thurberhouse.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the history of Columbus with the authors of a new daily almanac. It's called On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. If you have a question or comment about the history of the city of Ohio, I'm sorry, city of Columbus, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page. My guests, Tom Betty and Doreen Uhasauer of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. Let's take a call now from Robert in Columbus. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. My question is, where was the first Ohio State football field located on campus?
To the best of my knowledge, there is actually an early football field that would have been in what we call South Campus today, where there was a dormitory, probably down by the medical center. But the one that most people cite is the one that's fast disappearing under a new building right at High Street. And across from the McDonald's, that's the old Ohio field where Chick Harley played. And his popularity was so great that it necessitated building a stadium. And that's why his terracotta image is across the street on the old theater. So I would say most people would point to Ohio field, but there is another one further south they talk about.
Well, you're right. From 1892 to 97, it ran east and west. And it was right by the North Dormitory.
Right.
It's in the little courtyard between the James Medical Center and Hamilton Hall and Postal Hall. But there's nothing, there's no plaque or anything designating as the first where they played football for 5 years at Ohio State.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, as the building is being built on High Street, where Ohio Field, the one people probably refer to first, there was a marker there, and I wonder, I'm hoping it'll still stay. Because
it's a big boulder with a plaque about Chick Harley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Robert.
Thank you very much. Well, now we know that you were quizzing our guests. You weren't querying. Okay.
100%.
All righty. Thanks
for
your call.
Did I pass?
All right. Thanks to Robert. Richard in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Hi, this is Richard. Yeah. I was wondering if you remembered that about 1966, 67, or 68, somewhere in there, there was still a great drugstore at the corner of Broad and High.
Yes, in the Deschler Hotel.
Yes, and one day there was a angry husband who came there. His wife worked in the great drugstore, and he killed her.
Wow. No, I didn't know that. That's very, very interesting. I came to Columbus in about 65 and started, you know, really sort of following local history, but I didn't know that. We did find another murder in the Deschler that was covered up. They didn't call it in because the Deschler was still fairly new and they didn't want bad publicity. And then Tom found a story about Harry Truman in the Deschler that we've included too. But that's interesting.
One of my favorite summertime reading books is Harry Truman's Excellent Adventure, and it's about former President Harry Truman before former presidents were protected by Secret Service going on this road trip. And one of the stops that the president and Mrs. Truman stopped overnight was the Deschler Hotel in Columbus, Ohio.
It was quite an institution in the downtown.
Yeah, a real loss, a real loss.
When did it shut down?
1969, I believe.
And what's interesting is, you know, it was a parking lot for so long, and then One Columbus, of course, is on that spot. And in the wall of One Columbus are facsimiles of Betsy Green Deschler's letters and diaries that were left. They had been in the Deschler Hotel, the original, kind of like a little cornerstone, and then they were put back in again with One Columbus, so...
Oh, neat. Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm glad I could provide a new story for you.
All right, yes, Richard. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Actually, you know, we kid a lot. It's called Columbus, Ohio History, but we really do see this as trying to link strongly to a sense of place, which is what landmarks is about. And so it's architecture and it is history. But we keep scratching our heads trying to figure out how we can do sex scandals and gutters, something that links it all together.
That tour will be sold out, guaranteed.
There's always another, you know, there's always another topic to
so keep
to
those
mine.
Stories coming yeah. to landmarks.
But exactly. In that vein, I did want to read the dedication in the front of the book.
Okay.
This book is dedicated to Columbus Landmarks Foundation supporters and the Education Committee members who believe that without a story, a brick is just a brick. And that's the connection between preservation and history. Without a story, it's just an old building. But with a story, it's something unique and special to our heritage and to our the history of our city.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question about our history in the city of Columbus, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I had the 4 stars from the Jersey Boys in a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the Ohio Theater, and one of them said, you know, I heard that and they were just going on and on about it, about how beautiful. And in fact, one of them said, I always look forward to coming back to Columbus just to see that theater and perform in that theater. And he said, I thought I heard a story. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I mean, and it meant a lot to them to know right. that it was hours from the wrecking ball.
Yeah, it really was.
It's a different feeling when you're there, when you know that.
I always like to go enter and exit through the front doors because, you know, you just have that... the palatial feeling of, you know, walking into something very special.
I like to enter, but I'm usually exiting the side doors because I'm in such a hurry to get to my car before the traffic jam starts.
It's the same thing.
Terrible.
My husband and I have symphony tickets, and we're way up in the back.
I guess
the
I'm the only old school fashion person
are,
around.
And no matter how fast we try to get out, we find that the symphony, the extra orchestra members, they actually get out first, you know, with huge instruments. And I'm wondering where there's like this vacuum chute, you know, that pulls them out.
Yeah, but you're right. As long as you're stuck in there, it's a beautiful place to be. That's for sure. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which is kind of mindful of lots of Lazarus stories, and there are just tons of Lazarus stories. So the one that always sort of tickled me, and it's kind of at the bottom of another entry, was that for a while the competitors across the street in the Union Fashion, other stores, someone had told me this, said, you know, we don't mind the remnant days, and you know, they Lazarus draws, and the people are around the block and whatnot, but when they open the air curtain door and they suck them in, that's when we really object.
Kevin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin. Hello, Kevin. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air. Well, maybe Kevin's not on the air. We'll see what happens, and they can check with him. Let's try that one more time. Kevin? Hi, Kevin.
Yes.
You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Was wondering, whatever happened to the old Kelly Mansion?
Oh, good question.
It was assembled and parts removed, I believe, out the Wolf Park.
Right.
And then they just evaporated.
No, actually what happened, and this is a story intimately connected with landmarks, because Dixie Sarah Miller, you know, fought for so long to keep that Kelly Mansion and to be able to preserve it. And there was so much talk that when Ohio Village would eventually be built, the Kelly Mansion would be reassembled and go out there. Well, it also became apparent that it's, you know, preservationists have problems with petting zoos of buildings reassembled. But the building was so big and so different that it would have been hard to be there and with contemporary buildings of its same era. So the stones were moved to the Hale Farm and up near Cleveland because some were used for flood control at Wolf Park in the 1950s, and they sat up there, all the numbers washed off. It would have been well over $2 million to try to reassemble it, but just we just learned maybe last year, and Dixie Sarah Miller had passed away about the same time that before she died, she made contact with him and said, you know, it's never going to be reassembled, and you can do with them what you wish. So I guess the Kelly Mansion is probably, the stones probably aren't there.
Tell us about the Kelly Mansion.
It was a Greek Revival temple-like building, and Alfred Kelly had come to Columbus as a legislator from the Cleveland area, really advocated for building the canal connecting because there were no railroads yet. National Road was not coming in yet, and Columbus was dying. And he staked this unbelievable house that he had built on Broad Street, right where the Franklin County, where the old COSI was, and the Christopher Inn would have been on the other side of it. And he staked his fortune on the New York Stock Exchange that if the canals bellied up, that the mansion would be sold. So it was the house that saved Ohio is actually how it's referred to in children's textbooks, and yet Ohio didn't save that house. And so it was magnificent. It's well documented. It just doesn't exist.
Thanks a lot for that call, Kevin. This is an interesting question. JB in Dublin?
Yeah, as a Dublin resident, I'm always driving on Sawmill Road, and I'm wondering, was there ever an actual sawmill, and where was it?
You know, there was, but I'm trying to think right now. It does take its name from that, but I am kind of searching to try to locate exactly where the mill would have been.
So you're curious, you've been looking into that, but you're not sure.
We're not exactly sure, right.
Okay. Well, if anybody out there has an idea about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Sorry, JB, maybe someone out there knows it, but it's a good question. You are listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of my conversation about Columbus history still to come. But first, here's Rob Walker and Steve Brown to tell you about our thank you gift for this hour and to talk to you about why you should support 89.7 NPR News right now.
And thank you very much, Ann. You should support 89.7 NPR News because we bring you insightful programs like today's All Sides with Ann Fisher. Good morning. I'm Steve Brown, and this is the 89.7 NPR News Fall Fun Drive. Listeners are our most important source of income. Giving now to 1-866-897-9678 takes a few minutes of your time. So please invest in your future 89.7 NPR News listening by calling now, 1-866-897-9678 or give at WOSU.org.
Well, it's simple and easy to join us. And if you contribute right now at the $10 a month sustaining level, we'll be happy to offer you the book that is being discussed right now on All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. It is a fantastic book. It is written in a daily form, so you can just look up any given day or read what happened on that day in history. 365 fascinating vignettes about Columbus. You can read the book page by page, flip through to find any day of the year. We're offering this book to you as a way of saying thank you at the $10 a month sustaining level or one-time gift of $120 at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a two-hour daily call-in show, And it's unique to 89.7 NPR News. You're not going to find a show like this anywhere else on the radio dial. Civil conversations about state politics, issues at Columbus City Hall, events happening around Ohio. If a two-hour local call-in show is valuable to you as a listener, then we need you to support with a pledge. Whatever you can fit into your budget, it all adds up to make the important source of income that we need here at 89.7 NPR News. Call 1-866-897-9678 or make your pledge at WOSU.org.
And when you do contribute at the $10 a month sustaining level, you also qualify for the WOSU member card. The WOSU member card is good for dining discounts at about 200 area restaurants and arts organizations in our area, bed and breakfasts throughout the nation, over 1,000 online merchants. Also honor the WOSU member card. That's our gift to you with a gift of at least $85 annually or $7 a month. But if you go ahead and get the book we're talking about this hour, On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History, it's a $10 a month sustaining membership, you'll also get the member card as well. It's simple to do it. You can pledge it by phone. If you have your mobile app, you could just click Donate Now, or you can visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
Maybe you're wondering if you listen to 89.7 NPR News enough to warrant a contribution. Have you ever told someone that you heard it on public radio? Maybe you bought a book or tried a new recipe because you heard about it here. If you've ever lingered just a little longer to hear the end of a story, what we call a driveway moment, then yes, you've listened enough. And since you're listening, even during the fund drive, if you're listening right now, we know you're a dedicated listener to 89.7 NPR News. You know what you need to do. Please contribute now. Call 1-866-897-9678 or give when you go to WOSU.org.
Once again, with your gift of $10 a month as a sustaining member, we'll be happy to offer you On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. On the back, it says a slice of Columbus history for every day of the year. It's a very nice book, and the authors are certainly talking a lot about Columbus history. If you appreciate it, and maybe you're a fan of Columbus neighborhoods that you've watched on WOSU TV, well, this is a great book to have as well. It is a $10 a month sustaining membership or a $120 annual gift at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. If you're streaming right now, you can click the button there on the bottom of the streamer. If you're listening on your mobile device, there's an easy way for you to donate from there as well. The number again is 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
And you're listening right now either on a radio, your tablet, your computer, your smartphone. You have a lot of choices when it comes to where to get your news, but you choose 89.7 NPR News, Columbus's only all-day NPR news station. We're with you all day from Morning Edition to All Sides with Ann Fisher to Here and Now to All Things Considered. No matter the time of day, 89.7 brings you Central Ohio's most thoughtful and comprehensive news coverage. It brings you unbiased, in-depth coverage from the world's capitals, Washington, D.C., the State House, even your local county up in Union County or down in Pickaway County. We've got it covered. Your financial support makes all this possible. Please help support 89.7. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
And once again, at your $10 a month sustaining level, the book On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History is our way of saying thank you. It's a perfect for any history enthusiast and anyone who just loves the city of Columbus. Here's some examples. In January of 1857, the city hired a marching band to test the strength of the incomplete stairs in the State House. On June 2nd, 1962, or is that 62 or 82? Sorry, my eyes are not as good as they were. Columbus held its first gay pride parade, and in December of 1913, there was a prohibition of public dancing in city parks. That's all available to you as our way of saying thank you at a $10 a month sustaining level. It is On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History, and it's the book that the authors are talking about right now on All Sides with Ann Fisher. WOSU.org or 1-866-897-9678.
Support comes from Ohio Northern University. Experience ONU Days are on October 16th and 18th. Potential students will feel what it's like to be in college by touring the campus, talking with the faculty and students of ONU's arts, sciences, and professional programs, and much more. Registration at onu.edu.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Tom Betty and Doreen Juha-Sauer of Columbus Landmarks Foundation. They claim to have other real jobs, but the only time I ever talk to them is about history, the history of Columbus. And they're the authors of a new book. It's called On This Day in Columbus, Ohio History. It's kind of an almanac, a day-by-day almanac of the history of Columbus with a little this and that's about the city and its architecture and so forth. So if you have a question or comment about the history of Columbus, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you wanted to, Tom, talk about Governor Jim Rhodes. And everybody has a million stories about old Jim Rhodes, but you had a couple specifically you wanted to talk about.
Two are in the book and one is not. It's kind of a running joke when we were putting together this book. And Doreen and I have, you know, real jobs outside of history, you know.
What do you do, Tom?
I work for the state, and Doreen works for the Columbus City Schools. And so all of this stuff is in our free time, if we have any.
Apparently you do.
But one of our running jokes of putting this book together was we were in the Columbus Metropolitan Library going through the microfilm, and almost every single picture of a famous person coming to Columbus, Jim Rhodes was there. So Harry Truman, Marilyn Monroe, Bob Hope, you name it, Jim Rhodes was there.
Like in the background, maybe?
He
or
is
kind
the
of just
media
lurking.
Hound.
Or like he's like the, what do they call that when you do, there's always somebody in the background.
And one of my, I'll tell you three of my favorite stories about Jim Rhodes really quick. One is in 1966. Lyndon Johnson was coming from, with Air Force One from Michigan. And Jim Rhodes takes the state plane to Michigan, talks his way on board Air Force One so that when it lands in Dayton.
And this is to see a Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But he wanted, you know, he wanted the photo op.
This was in the day, yeah.
Photo op king, Jim Rhodes. I wish I had the opportunity to meet this guy because he was one in a million. The photo op king. So he talked his way, and I'm sure the Secret Service had some, you know, code name for him, Trouble Governor or something, because, you know, he would always throw their plans into an uproar. So the governor of Ohio, you know, lands in Michigan and talks his way on board Air Force One so that when it lands in Dayton, he can pop off with Lyndon Johnson for Lyndon Johnson to make a couple's, you know, remarks. They get back on Air Force One, and then they come to Columbus. Same thing, you know, Lyndon Johnson and Jim Rhodes come off of Air Force One, and then they travel by motorcade to Lancaster, and then they come back, and Jim Rhodes actually goes with him, and then they have to send the state plane to, you know, to pick him up. So it must have been, you know, I've heard stories that Air Force One has really, really gourmet, you know, M&Ms or something. Something, you know, must have been great.
Well, I think it's probably pretty cool to be on Air Force One, but I just try and imagine a governor of Ohio trying to get on Air Force One with a Democratic president.
Those were the good old days,
though, you know. Those were the good old days.
Another story is in 1972, Woody Hayes and Richard Nixon were really, really good friends. And Woody Hayes was doing an event at the State House for Richard Nixon's reelection campaign. And Jim Rhodes was picking up the president at Port Columbus when Air Force One landed, of course, to get his picture taken, you know, as the president was coming off. But the people escorting the motorcade were the Highway Patrol on motorcycles. And Jim Rhodes told the Highway Patrol, don't tell anybody, but take them to this location. Don't tell anybody. So, you know, the motorcade is, you know, going through the city of Columbus, and all of a sudden it takes a detour. The Secret Service probably was freaking out, and they ended up at the state fairgrounds. And Jim Rhodes arranged to have all of the photographers there. And he's like, Mr. President, you have to get out. And, you know, all the photographers are here. And you have to dedicate this new slide that we have. That didn't make the book. But can you imagine Richard Nixon, you know, oh, my God, I have to get out and dedicate this
slide. Now that we've heard the tapes.
And then the last story about Jim Rhodes in my favorite collection was in 1980, May of 1980. Jimmy Carter was running for re-election and Air Force One landed. There was Columbus. I don't know how often this happens, but I'm sure it doesn't happen very often, where you have the challenger and the incumbent president having dueling rallies in the same city at the same time. So in May 1980, there was a rally for President Carter's reelection campaign. And also at the State House, there was a rally for Governor Ronald Reagan. So Jim Rhodes races to Port Columbus to get his picture taken, greeting President Carter coming off Air Force One. And then he races to the State House to endorse Ronald Reagan for president.
Again,
this guy's everywhere.
But that wouldn't happen today, no matter what. But that is pretty amazing. He was a news hound, mm-hmm. a photo hog. What else can we say about him? Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Hello. Wanted to know if they had any information in the book about the Prohibition era and possibly about a man who was known around town as the gentleman gambler named Pat Murnan. He was my mother's uncle, and the reason he was known as the gentleman gambler is he would make sure that if he knew someone was trying to gamble the last of their money away and they needed to feed their family, he would turn them away from his establishment. And when he passed away, she and my aunt told us they remember sitting at the top of the stairs listening to the family, who held him in quite a bunch of disrespect, talking about what they might get from his will, mm-hmm. all of which went to his young wife, mm-hmm. Who they had said was possibly a madam in a related establishment to his gambling den. And I will listen online.
Okay. Thank you.
We do. We have some stories. And, you know, of course, this is intimately related to the horse farm that Pat Murnan and his young wife, and there's still a lot of debate about whether they were married or not, legally married, that eventually will sort of play into Clintonville history. And the reason I'm sort of hedging on this a bit is because the Clintonville WOSU video will be coming out soon, and there's a really great segment that Mary Rathke is putting together about Pat Murnan and that history. He's certainly a colorful figure, and there's just a lot of questions, but the fact that he was the gentleman with probably the least fashion sense when he least would wear things really is just so part of the legend of Columbus. And there are Prohibition stories in here because Tom and I have also written about taverns, so we started to know more about Prohibition than we had amassed before, you know, the Hey Hey Tavern and other things. So if you don't mind, I'll kind of beg off because that one's coming up soon and
right.
I don't want to spoil it.
And somebody also called in to ask about Graceland. It's a long story. It's all interconnected. It's all, you know, it probably, it in some way or another, will be covered in the WOSU Columbus Neighborhoods series. They just premiered the one on the south side, and coming up next is the Clintonville episode. So we're looking forward to that. It's
underway. You could also come on our historic tavern tours with Columbus Landmarks, and you can all the information is on columbuslandmarks.org.
Okay. So we have a few more minutes left. If anyone wants to give us a call, they might be able to get it in on time. Otherwise, quickly, 614-292-8513. Let's talk a little bit about your tours before we go. You've got the tavern tour, which is very, very popular. You have your haunted tavern tour.
We have haunted tavern tours.
Do you have a Christmas tavern tour?
What tours don't we have? Yeah.
Do you guys actually go on all these tours, or are there a bunch of people that participate in them?
No, in fact, for the most part, Tom and I do most of them.
Wow.
I mean, we really believe in kind of being able to have sort of a quality control. We have a lot of help, a lot of good backup and whatnot mm-hmm. and research. But there's also another set of tours we've been doing all summer long for the Columbus Health Department. And these are walking tours based on the Art Walk maps. And they started in July, and we have last two Mondays. They're free.
Why through the Columbus Health Department?
Because they want people out there walking.
It's their wellness thing.
Right, yeah. And they did these wonderful little maps in 12 neighborhoods, and they And so they ask us if we would kind of debut it by doing sort of a mini version. So we do 45 to an hour walking tours, and you can't cover the whole map. So we pick little segments and do it. And what we do is, you know, you could read the signs. You could gear it to your phone and find out about certain spots, you know, public art and mm-hmm. old churches went out. So what we try to do is fill in the context of the neighborhood so that people are more intrigued. And we thought at one point we would get, 20, 30 people. These are free. Went out. The first one had 100.
Oh, my gosh.
Another one had 70. Another one had 65.
This is a town that loves its history.
And they love free things.
And they should.
This and is from, should. Like, the Institute for Active Living and the Columbus Health Department.
Right. And so it's got its own little following, but it actually ties into this book in a way because people, you know, we're doing Broad Street, for instance, and you're right there by St. Joseph's Cathedral, and there are at least three stories in this book about what that area was like. And the Deschler house that was right in the side yard of St. Joseph's, and the kids would go get water for the elephants when the circus was in town from Spring Street, which was an actual active
spring.
And then you have the woman who walked from her uncle's house on Rich Street every day over to Central High School, with the old Central High School, which when it was demolished, 100,000 bricks were saved to make Players Theater. And that woman who had kind of an unhappy life and wound up leaving was Robert Frost's mother, who lived here. So you start to put all this together, and then you're standing in the original Wendy's parking lot, you know. And I remember Reed Wasserstrom talking about, because they did all of their kitchen pieces, linking all those little sort of 1960s kind of color pieces that used to hang in.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's gone. There's a historic marker there.
Right.
But it's the Catholic Foundation, and it's like a tiny little cathedral. And it's the exact same building, you know. And it's just so all of a sudden you've got these great stories on one corner. And I think that's the context
people are looking
for. All
you have to do is turn around.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we do have two more Mondays a free walking tour is coming up, too. And they can check on the website.
All right. Well, everybody, do check out the website. It is
columbuslandmarks.org.
Okay. And you can find out about all their tours, all their seasonal tours and so forth. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And I want to say thanks to authors Tom Betty and Doreen Juha-Sauer for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thanks
for having
us back. It's been
a pleasure, as always.
Thank you.